The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, you're sounding in very energetic mood this morning. Howard, it's great to start a new month, another new month. We had a new month yesterday, now a new month today.
Absolutely.
One thing that you might be interested to hear about is the visit to Israel by the governor of Arizona, Doug Ducey. And he is visiting Israel not for the first time. And his main interest is the whole area of desalination. Obviously, Arizona, a very, very dry state, it's very much a desert state, and obviously has its water issues. And he is on a five-day trade mission, his third visit apparently to Israel as governor. And he has been visiting Israeli desalination plants in order to learn a little bit more about how Israel deals with the water problem that we experience here. And he thinks that the desalination project that he's discussed with Israeli companies and also the Israeli government could well secure water in Arizona for the next 100 years. And he has been very much impressed by Israeli desalination. He claims that Israel is a water power and that he would like to try to use the desalination technology that is found in Israel for the state of Arizona. He will not be able to stand as governor again for the next term because he's now run out of time. But I have little doubt that the work that he's doing may well roll into the next term. Whoever will take over from him as governor and may well stand Arizona in good stead. Amazing. In the future. Interesting that Arizona is one of the U.S.'s biggest, the one state in the U.S. that's growing the most out of all other states, which came as a little bit of a surprise to me. And also, he's apparently quite interested in the border fence that has been built in Israel. Of course, Arizona shares a border with Mexico, and even though he says we do have a wall of physical barrier, there are gaps that have invited human smuggling, drug cartels, and crime that he would like to eliminate. And he is very interested to see how Israel deals with the border security issue. So quite some fascinating things. Who knew that we would have such a lot in common between Israel and Arizona?
Absolutely fascinating, but really incredible just to see the impact that Israel is having around the world for anyone who allows themselves that privilege, because so much innovation has come out of this tiny little plot of land in the toughest of neighborhoods. It's really just incredible to see.
I couldn't agree more.
The prosecution's case against former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu seems to have suffered a setback in court yesterday. What happened?
Yes, so the problem with the prosecution's case against the former Prime Minister is that it contains some factual inaccuracies about meetings that took place, phone calls in particular, not meetings so much, but phone calls that took place, and the dates of those phone calls. And in fact, yesterday in court, the judge was highly critical of these factual inaccuracies in the state's case against the former prime minister. And he was very, very harsh in coming down and saying that, you know, these factual inaccuracies are a potential problem. Of course, the former prime minister was hoping that these factual inaccuracies may well lead the court to potentially dismiss the case completely, or at the minimum, to somehow downgrade the seriousness of the case. Mm. And that, I think, is the way in which the Prime Minister's defense team was trying to lead things, that perhaps the case, the so-called case 4000, which involves Bezeq and the owners of Bezeq and potential favors that were done to the owners of Bezeq in order to potentially give the prime minister better exposure in the press, in some of the press outlets that are also owned by the owners of Bezeq. That apparently is the basis of this particular case. And the case accuses the prime minister of fraud, which is of course a very, very serious charge. And the prime minister, the former prime minister, was hoping, fraud and corruption, of course, but the former prime minister was hoping that as a result of these factual inaccuracies, the court might decide to downgrade the charge to breach of trust, which has quite a significant impact on the potential punishment that may be handed down as a result of a conviction, if indeed there is a conviction in this case. What was very, very interesting, however, was that the judge also chose to emphasize the court's right that it has under Section 184 of the Israeli criminal law, which does allow the court to convict a defendant based on facts that go beyond what was actually contained in the indictment. So what the judge, I think, was trying to do by emphasizing this was to say, even though there are some factual inaccuracies in the indictment, the court does have the flexibility under this section to potentially convict the prime minister, the former prime minister, if overall the case that has been presented is fairly convincing in spite of these slight factual inaccuracies. So even though many of much of the press this morning have said that the prosecution has suffered this major setback, I'm not sure that that's really the way it is, because I think that this emphasis of the judge on Section 184 and the fact that this section does allow the judge a massive amount of flexibility to convict the person who's been charged, even though the items are not necessarily in the indictment, I think is very, very telling. And I think that ultimately, this is really the message that the judge is trying to send, is that on the one hand, the prosecution really needs to be more accurate in putting its indictment together. But on the other hand, the court has a great deal of flexibility. And so I think that if the prosecution is able to prove that, you know, that even though the dates were wrong, that all of these events actually did take place and that the overall charge has been proved, the court may well decide to find the former prime minister guilty in spite of these inaccuracies. So I think we are still on track for some quite interesting interpretations of the events that have been presented in this case. It's still going to take some time until we get to the end of the case. But yesterday was definitely an interesting day in court where this is concerned.
It does worry me a bit, because it does seem to be just, it could be that it's much more political if we're starting to see these setbacks. It makes me wonder if this, a lot of the driver wasn't politics and not anything else. But I guess time will tell as we go through this case.
I think one of the things that we need to accept is that politics will always form part of this case. There is no possible way that political interests can be completely removed from a case of this nature, because this is really about surrounding circumstances, people, individuals who were all politically motivated. And so the whole political motivation issue can never, ever be removed satisfactorily for people like you and me to say, look, we've taken out the politics and this is just the pure facts of the case. That can never, ever be the case, because there's so much political innuendo, nuance, political interest that's going on here that it's just completely impossible to remove.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting, and certainly a story that will be followed. The IDF forces in Cyprus this week were in Cyprus this week as part of the exercise Chariots of Fire. What were they doing in Cyprus?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting little extension to exercise Chariots of Fire, which is still ongoing. And in fact, yesterday there were sirens sounding around the area where I work, which were all in part of the exercise. They were not real sirens, but just part of the exercise that's going on at the civilian level, in order to make people aware of what's happening. And it's all part of the ongoing Chariots of Fire. And of course, the Defense Minister Benny Gantz, as well as the IDF Chief of Staff Avir Kochavi, have been in Cyprus this week. Many of the IDF's elite units, including the Shayetet 13, which is the naval elite unit, and the Yahalom, which is a special combat engineering unit, and Oket, the K9 unit, intelligence units, troops from the Cyber Defense Directorate, have all been in Cyprus, because Cyprus presents for Israeli forces a little bit of the unknown. This is an attempt to try to simulate some sort of an operation in foreign territory, somewhere that Israel is not intimately familiar with. And the idea of going to Cyprus seemed a good one, seeing as we have a good cooperation with the Cypriot defense and, of course, government government officials. And so the IDF have decided to ship some key parts of the IDF over to Cyprus in order to encounter some slightly different terrain, some slightly unknown territory. And also the good thing about Cyprus is that it has a mountainous region, and the mountainous region in Cyprus could potentially simulate the mountainous region in Lebanon, which is quite unknown to IDF forces. So the idea of trying to create some slightly unknown territory and some different territory than the one that Israeli forces are accustomed to, being desert and relatively flat land area, which is where the IDF usually operates. And this is apparently the IDF have felt that Cyprus is a good simulation for this. Some senior IDF officials and, of course, government officials in the form of Defense Minister Benny Gantz have all been to visit to see activities in Cyprus. And I think it's an interesting way of trying to expand things a little bit and to create a little bit more of the unknown.
Absolutely. Just again, amazing to see cooperation in the region. President Herzog has told Israelis that comparing each other to Nazis crosses the red line. Or he gave them a little bit of a mussar, as we say in the classics.
Yeah, finger wagging session.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with him.
I do as well.
I really do agree with him. I mean, unfortunately, we've seen some outbursts in recent days and weeks, and actually, unfortunately, they're not unique. They've happened before, where people have compared others, really gone as far as possible in order to create some sort of a scandalous situation, because, you know, there has been a situation of a leading rabbi from a yeshiva in Bnei Brak who gave a lecture and who compared government ministers to Nazis. They are traitors to their people. They hate their people. They're worse than the Nazis, he said. The Nazis love their own people, but the ministers hate their people. And he actually went as far as naming Foreign Minister Yair Lapid and Finance Minister Avigdor Lieberman as well as their friends in this particular outburst that took place in the yeshiva. And of course, the fact that Lapid and Lieberman have been targeted is no surprise, because the ultra-Orthodox leadership have been very, very angry about their attempts to roll back many, many special benefits and exemptions that have been granted over the years to members of the ultra-Orthodox community and religious institutions. And they have now, Lieberman in particular, but also with the support of Yair Lapid, have tried to roll back those advantages in order to try to bring them in line with the advantages and special benefits, exemptions that are applicable to other Israelis across the board. So to try to remove somehow the special nature of those advantages, benefits, exemptions that have been granted to members of the ultra-Orthodox community. It's unsurprising that the ultra-Orthodox community are angry about this, because they have enjoyed these exemptions, special benefits for so many years. And all of a sudden, now that they're being rolled back, it's painful. It's not easy to have to deal with that situation. And also to explain to their followers why it is that the government now has decided to roll back these special benefits. It's interesting that the president has used the platform of the annual Jerusalem Unity Prize in order to give this mussar, in order to give his finger wagging session, because the whole point of the Unity Prize, the Jerusalem Unity Prize, was created in memory of three Israeli teenagers, Gilad Shaar, Eyal Yifrach and Naftali Frankel, who we may remember back from 2014, were actually kidnapped and were murdered by terrorists just before the outbreak of Operation Protective Edge, Tzuk Eitan. There was first the Operation Shuvu Banim, where the IDF went to look for these three young teenagers who had been kidnapped, and ultimately we discovered they'd been murdered as well. And then that rolled into Operation Tsuk Etan, which was a significant operation against forces in Gaza. And the families of those three youngsters have created the Jerusalem Unity Prize in order to give recognition to those people who are unifying our people rather than splitting them apart. And of course, the president used the platform he was addressing, the prize recipients of the Jerusalem Unity Prize, to give his Musa session and just to say, it's not okay to accuse fellow Israelis of being like Nazis. This is really crossing the red line. And as I said before, I definitely agree with him. Unfortunately, we see way too much of this rhetoric in our public discourse, people who disagree with others and then feel that that disagreement that you have is enough to compare them to Nazis, to compare them to traitors. I think that the rhetoric is way too extreme and we need to somehow roll it back. What do listeners think about all of that?
It surely also must be obviously exacerbated by the fact that the Haredi parties aren't part of the unity government.
And that there's a lot of frustration
and
there.
That's weakened the position and in fact now maybe are dealing with things that need to be dealt with, perhaps in a different way, but need to be addressed one way or another, not just from the basis of if we don't get what we want, then the government will collapse.
Absolutely, you know, the frustration of those ultra-Orthodox parties is plain to see, but they are not the only culprits of this extreme discourse. I mean, this is just one example because it happened in the last few days, but they are not the only ones who are responsible for this. And I think across the board, we just need to take it down a notch.
Absolutely right. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, it is 8 o'clock. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.